You're listening to This Week in Fantasy Baseball.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to This Week in Fantasy Baseball. I'm Lee Keller, joined by John Kuh. On this off-season episode of TWIFB, we will be recapping our TGFBI drafts. John and I are both lucky enough to be in TGFBI, and we are so excited about it. I've been in it for 4 years. John has been in it for 2. So we have a little bit of experience under our belt, and we're hoping to do better this season than we did last. But John did pretty well last season. We will get into that. We'll also talk about our pitcher list leagues. We're in a bunch of them, and John and I are actually in 2 of the same leagues, so that'll be fun to see who comes out on top, or at least just places higher in that league between each other. And we'll talk about a little bit more the news and some other stuff. So before we get into all of that, John, how has everything been lately?
It's been busy, like you mentioned. A lot of baseball drafts, so handling multiple spreadsheets that are open, tracking all the draft picks, and trying to make sure I'm making the right pick in the right draft. Because a couple points leagues, couple head-to-head leagues, you know, we're in a worst ball league together, so got to make sure that. Well, I will say we're kind of at the point of the worst ball draft where the players that we're drafting are also players that you'd probably be considering in a real draft as well. So it's a little confusing, but yeah, keeping all those things squared together, getting ready for baseball season. Cause that's coming up in about a month. So actually less than a month. So everything is piling up really quickly, but you know, trying to keep my head above water and enjoy the drafting period. Cause that's honestly one of my favorite parts of fantasy baseball is the draft.
One of the best times of the season is definitely draft season for sure. A lot of hype around it, but it can be overwhelming at times. Like right now, we were talking off air about this, but I'm currently in 5 drafts at the same time right now. They're slow drafts, so it's not like we're constantly switching tabs and freaking out, but we're in 5 different slow drafts here. John's in 4. I have my home league draft coming up this weekend. I have another draft on NFC going this weekend as well. So this is the crunch time. And this is really the last time to draft. So hopefully we can get all of that done this week because the first series of the season is actually on March 20th with the Soul Series between the Dodgers and the Padres. So that is coming up really, really fast. And then actual opening day is on March 28th, where all of the other teams play as well. So it's the end of draft season nearly, and we're just trying to get to that finish line. I mean, it is very stressful. I mean, we are in so many different leagues right now, and just remembering what format it is and what the rules are and the league settings and the position eligibilities, it's crazy. We're doing drafts on Fantrax and Yahoo and ESPN and Clicky Draft, and there's so many different platforms we're using, and it's making my head spin. But thankfully, they're coming together, and all of the drafts are kind of in their final phase. So hopefully we can get through all of that and come out sane on the other end and actually enjoy the season. So we shall see. But before we talk about our TGFBI drafts, just a reminder, you can follow our podcast on Twitter or X at ThisWeekPL. And you can send us your fantasy baseball questions to our email at thisweekplpod@gmail.com. Lastly, make sure that you subscribe to or follow the podcast on whatever streaming platform that you listen to your podcasts on. We are on all of them, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher. So please make sure you follow the podcast. And if you have the time, leave a 5-star review if you enjoy listening to the show. We would greatly appreciate it. It helps out the show a lot. So with that being said, before we get into the TGFBI drafts, I think it's important to talk about the news of players recently, and there's been some really big news. So first, we'll talk about the biggest impact in drafts at the moment and making a lot of people's head spins because a lot of people might have taken this player really early in their drafts. I'm talking first 2 rounds, and that's Gerrit Cole of the Yankees. He will be out for at least 1 to 2 months with an elbow injury. He's getting more testing done, but nothing's been confirmed yet. He's getting second opinions, going to doctors, so we're not sure exactly what it is. There's no tear, apparently, and according to John Heyman, he won't need Tommy John surgery, so that's a good sign at least, but we don't really know how long Gerrit Cole is going to be out. It could be 1 to 2 months, it could be 4 months, it could be 5 months. We're not sure, but it's definitely not good when one of your aces has an elbow problem, right, John?
Yeah, I mean, we saw this with Kyle Bradish at the beginning of spring training, where the Orioles were like, well, he's got like a slight UCL tear, but he doesn't need Tommy John yet. He's just going to get a PRP injection and think it's going to be fine. That's, we don't know what's the case right now with Kyle Bradish, and this whole thing with Gerrit Cole. Now, you know, we don't know if there's a tear or anything. It just sounded like he wasn't ramping up back to his normal fitness after every start. But that's something to be slightly worried about, just a little bit. So, yeah, it's not great. Now, the funny thing is, both the league that you and I are in, the staff league for a pitcher list, I generally never go for like top five pitchers. Like, that's just not my MO. I'd rather spend that draft capital on hitters. But in this 12 teamer, Gerrit Cole lasted all the way to me in the fifth round, which I was very happy about. Got him with the fifth round, third pick. Of course, at the time, we didn't know he was going to be out for 1 to 2 months, but I figured, yeah, worth a gamble. Now that I know that he's going to be out for 1 to 2 months, I don't know if I'd even spend that high. I would definitely not spend as high of a fifth rounder on him. But, you know, just some interesting things I think of. Just Gerrit Cole is not undraftable, but he is definitely going to be falling in drafts by a bit, especially if more news comes out about how severe that elbow injury is, because he's still, I think, like going to visit a doctor or a surgeon or something like that and get some more opinions. But it's at least good news that he's not going to need Tommy John, but I also don't know exactly what that means.
Yeah, the direct quote from Cole himself, he left his outing and pretty much said, it felt like I'd had thrown 100 pitches already and was deep into an outing, and it just had extra stress on his elbow as if he were to pitch a very long outing. So I'm not really sure what this is. Obviously, he's going to get a PRP injection and try to just rest and heal it the natural way, which I don't know how much that's going to work. And when they say a 1 to 2 month time period, you got to think he's going to rest for at least a month, then try throwing. And if there's a setback, then maybe he misses another 2 weeks, maybe another month. By the time he's back and at full health and throwing, I don't know, 6 innings in live games for the Yankees, I'm going to say like 4 months is the best case scenario. It's like 3 or 4 months that I think he'll be actually back on the field, because 1 to 2, sure, that's possible. And that's what they're saying. But I think he's going to need more time to build up, and they're not going to want to rush him, especially if the Yankees are off to a good start. They're going to make sure that he has enough time to recover where he's not going to get re-injured and he'll be out for potentially the rest of the season. So it's a very complicated situation. It is tough for Yankee fans. I mean, I feel for all the Yankee fans. You're finally understanding what it feels like to be a Mets fan when you're going into the season and your ace is out like immediately. So it's not fun. And I really send my condolences to you all, especially anybody who drafted Gerrit Cole before the news. That's a rough start to your season. I actually have a story as well, John. I will share that for when the player comes up, but it is not good. Kind of like you took Gerrit Cole in the fifth. That was obviously when we knew he was injured and he fell all the way there, but he wasn't announced to miss 1 to 2 months. But I still think it's a decent pick at that point. You might as well take the gamble on him, right? So I don't see a problem with that, but mine is a little bit worse. But Gerrit Cole will be out for at least 1 to 2 months. Draft accordingly. I would move him down to like SP40 overall, maybe SP50, somewhere in that range, where if I'm going to take the gamble, I'd want to see all of the bigger pitchers off the board, the Lizardos, the Cole Reagans, the Dylan Ceases, that kind of tier of pitcher. I would have to take them before Gerrit Cole. And then once they're all off the board, maybe I gamble on Gerrit Cole. So it's tough.
Yeah. I'm just curious, just, you know, rapid fire question. Who would you rather take right now, Gerrit Cole or Jacob deGrom?
That's a great question. I think I would lean Gerrit Cole.
Mm-hmm.
And it's tough because Jacob deGrom was hurt. He had Tommy John, but he should be back at the end of this season, sometime after the All-Star break. But I just don't see him getting more than, what, like 6 starts? I'll take the gamble on Gerrit Cole either getting 6 starts at the end of the season or more. So I'm just going to say, pure volume-wise, I'm going to go with Cole because I feel like he will get more starts than Jacob deGrom.
Mm-hmm.
But anything can happen between those two. I think Gerrit Cole, depending on where he goes, because, I mean, DeGrom is going super late. So
right. Yeah.
if I'm going to take either Cole in the 8th or DeGrom in the 20th, give me DeGrom in the 20th. But if you're talking about just even value, they're both going to go one pick after each other, I would rather gamble on Gerrit Cole for that price.
Yeah, it's interesting because it's like if it's only 1 to 2 months, you obviously take Cole.
Yeah.
I think if it's, you know, closer to 3 to 4, then that's when it gets interesting if, like, they might end up throwing the same amount of starts.
Right.
And obviously, like, we're talking, like, you know, back of the draft sort of pickup. You're not taking a guy in, you know, like, the 15th round in a, you know, the 23-person team. You know, it's...
No, right.
It's like we're talking last three rounds of a draft. So, yeah, it's an interesting decision because right now with this news, it could make sense to pick him up, you know, round 10 in a 12 teamer or something like that. But yeah, injuries like this, you just never love elbow injuries for pitchers. It's always just the big what if.
Yeah, pitchers are already injury prone enough, and there's so much weight when you draft a pitcher where it's like, okay, I'm expecting this guy to bear the load of the innings and be my main ace. And then if they get hurt, you're like, well, I am scrambling. So there's just so much added pressure that it's hard to draft someone like Gerrit Cole, who's already hurt with an elbow issue that you're already scared about. So it's tough, but if he falls to the right price, that's when I would jump on him. Like you said, in a 12-team league, somewhere around the 10th round, I think he'd probably be the best player available. Mm-hmm. So I would grab him, and I don't see anything wrong with that. If you want to gamble on him like that, sure, be my guest, because I would do the same thing. So I would just need a heavy discount on Gerrit Cole before I jump in, because I'm not counting on him to pitch, I don't know, half the season. I would gamble on him pitching a 2-healthy-month season. Mm-hmm. So that's what I'm banking on, but who knows? I mean, it's always scary when you hear pitcher elbow injury. So hope Gerrit Cole takes the mound for the Yankees at some point this season, and anybody who draft him get to use him well. Moving on to another injury that's pretty devastating. Devin Williams of the Brewers has a stress fracture in his back. He actually has two of them in his back, which is just crazy to think of. Two stress fractures in your back. He's out for 3 to 4 months, which means that one of the three will be in line for saves. It's going to be between Joel Piamps, Abner Uribe, or Trevor Megill. And my personal opinion is that it's going to be Joel Piamps. He got most of the 8th innings before Devin Williams last season when Devin Williams wasn't available. Joel Piamps got the save chances. So I think they're going to use Joel Piamps. I know Abner Uribe had a lot of great underlying stats. So did Joel Piamps, but Abner's were abnormally better. And I just think Joel's going to get the lion's share of the saves there, which is just a huge fumble on my part because I was going to take him at the end of my TGFBI draft with literally the very last pick. And I said, it's Devin Williams. He's going to be fine. I'll take someone else. And I took someone else. And then 3 days later, Devin Williams is out for 3 to 4 months. So I was like, great, cool. Should have took Piamps. So now I'm going to have to bid fab budget on him, which I don't like. But Devin Williams out for 3 to 4 months with two stress fractures in his back. John, do you have any shares of Devin Williams? And what do you think about this?
I don't have any shares of Devin Williams currently. I'm not going to have anywhere shares of him after this. That's for sure.
Yeah.
It's kind of an unfortunate situation there because he was basically a top three closer. I mean, basically behind Diaz and Clase, right?
Devin Williams was drafted first out of that group.
Right. And so, I mean, part of it was too, is like more stability, right? Because obviously Edwin Diaz is coming off, you know, a weird injury. And then Clase was really good last year, but he also had some really random blow up. So it definitely felt like Devin Williams was the safe pick out of those three. Right. I don't know if I really have an opinion on who's going to get it. Knowing the Brewers, yes, they've had kind of established, Josh Hader's our closer. He's going to close, and then Devin Williams is our eighth man guy, right? In this situation, they could kind of just do whatever they want. They could do closer by committee if they really wanted to. I don't know. There is an interesting conversation on Twitter from Adam Howe, who is technically our boss as the podcast manager, but he was kind of talking about how arbitration eligibility could factor into the equation, where Abner is not arbitration eligible till 2027. Piamps has 2 years of arbitration. Megill has 3 years of arbitration. And so having saves could factor into the money that that the Brewers want to pay. And let's be honest, the Brewers just are a very cheap franchise, right? They're not going to care that much about wanting to spend more money if they can't. And so there was just some argument that Uribe might actually end up getting saves, more save chances, because the number of saves that he gets is not going to factor into how much he costs next year, which is kind of ridiculous. But, you know, that could be a thing if they're like, hey, Williams is out for 3 to 4 months. Let's get this guy in to, you know, rack up some stats that aren't going to affect how expensive he is. And then we'll have Williams back to, you know, save for the last 3 months of baseball. So I don't know. It's an interesting argument. You know, I think the guy who has the best stuff is Pyamps out of the three. But, you know, that being said, there's a possibility that money might be part of the equation here, which is dumb. But
it definitely could, for sure. I agree with that completely. And Devin Williams was someone who was a possible trade candidate for the Brewers if they were out of it and could be moved. Same with Emmanuel Clase. So we could have seen some shifts there anyway, where Joel Pyamps took over the closer role or whoever gets that role. So I'm not sure which of the three I take. I would lean Joel Pyamps over Abner Uribe and Trevor Megill. I think they're more traditional setup guys, and Pyamps could naturally take over the closer role, but just a devastating blow to lose Devin Williams this close to the season. And for anyone who drafted him as well, it's a huge hit. You probably drafted him with one of your third, fourth, or fifth round picks in a traditional saves league. So very tough loss there for people who drafted Devin Williams, as well as the Brewers in general. So Gerrit Cole and Devin Williams both out for quite some time. And then we have someone else who's out for quite some time, and that's Noelvi Marte, who is suspended 80 games for PEDs, which is just insane. You don't expect that out of a up-and-coming top prospect who was set to break out this year. A lot of people were very high on Noelvi Marte, including myself. So it's pretty nuts to see that he's suspended 80 games for PEDs. There's a lot of question marks around him. Is he going to be even good without the PEDs? Was he only good because he was on PEDs? Who knows? So he'll have a lot of questions to answer when he comes back. But the only good news from that news is that it kind of alleviates the infield logjam that the Reds had, right? We were talking all offseason about how, oh, where's Jamer Candelario going to play, and Spencer Steer and Christian Encarnacion Strand and Ellie and Matt McClain and Jonathan India? Kind of answers all of those questions now that Noelvi Marte is not in the mix. So I think all of them are going to get playing time, and all of them are great draft targets now. So Noelvi Marte suspended 80 games for PEDs. Not great news, but all of the other Reds players, their stock is up. And then last but not least, we have a trade that went down. And this is not the team that I thought was going to trade for this player. After the Gerrit Cole news, I thought the Yankees were going to pull off a trade to get this player. But it was the Padres who ended up trading the White Sox for Dylan Cease. The Padres acquired Dylan Cease for Drew Thorpe, who they got in the Juan Soto trade, of course, Jairo Iriarte, and Samuel Zavala, as well as reliever Steven Wilson. So the White Sox got quite a haul back for Dylan Cease, and I believe Dylan Cease has 2 more years of control, so the Padres have him for a little bit of time, and they managed to turn Juan Soto into Dylan Cease, Michael King, and a few other prospects. So not bad in that front, but Dylan Cease is now a Padre, and he gets a huge boon in park factor. The White Sox had a really bad park for pitchers, and the Padres had a very good park for pitchers, to put it plain and simple. So Dylan Cease gets a park upgrade. He's probably still going to walk a bunch of people. I mean, changing parks isn't going to change his command, of course, but he's going to get a lot of strikeouts. He's going to get more wins because he's playing on the Padres rather than the White Sox. And I think he's a great draft target now at the value he's at. I personally am very high on Dylan Cease. And remember how I told you a little bit earlier, John, that Gerrit Cole, you drafting him in the fifth was kind of eh when you found out he was out for 1 to 2 months. Well, my sad story is I'm in an AL-only draft at the moment.
Oh, tough.
And my second pitcher was Dylan Cease. And you know what happened before the season even started? He got traded to an NL team. So what happens? I wasted a pick.
Yeah, yep. That's tough.
There goes Dylan Cease. So yeah, AL-only league, rough. I know not many people can sympathize with that, but it is very unfortunate. This is the first time I'm doing an AL or NL-only league because the opportunity presented itself on pitcher list. And I said, you know what? That sounds fun. I was hoping to be in the NL league, but I said, I'll do either. And my team name is aptly, I'm a Mets fan. What am I doing here in the AL-only league? And I drafted Dylan Cease, and for the first time, I felt what it felt like to lose a player in the draft due to a trade. So, not very good. But overall, what do you think of this Dylan Cease trade, John?
I mean, I like it for the reasons you mentioned, right? Better park factor. And even though he's going to walk a lot of people, he's going to have an elite defense behind him, right?
Yep.
Ha-Sung Kim at shortstop. You've got Manny at third base. You've got Xander Bogaerts at second. So even though he's going to, you know, walk a lot of people, that ERA is going to probably stay a little bit lower than it was in Chicago last year, just because the infield defense behind him is pretty decent. And so even when he throws, you know, some mistakes here and there, he's not going to get as burned by them, because the team behind him is going to help him out just a little bit. That being said, though, a better defense doesn't prevent you from walking players. So,
yep.
I think that's not going to change for Cease. But you know, there's something to be said about, you know, being in a new location. And I will say, San Diego has a lot better weather than Chicago, so maybe that helps him out a little bit. I don't know. It's a good trade for the Padres, I think. And ultimately for Cease's stock, like maybe it bumps it up just a tiny bit. But he was already kind of going top 15, top 20 in most drafts. So I don't think this is going to bump him into the top 10, but maybe it's going to push people to draft him maybe a round earlier than they were thinking before. But it probably shouldn't impact too many drafts.
Yeah, I agree with that. But the one thing I will say about Dylan Cease's lack of control and command is we just saw a San Diego Padre win the Cy Young with an abnormally high walk rate, and that mm-hmm. was Blake Snell.
Yep.
And once again, Blake Snell was able to pitch out of trouble. He has that great defense behind him. You even have Tatis in the outfield, who won a gold glove last season, I believe. So I think that in general, the Padre change is going to do wonders for Dylan Cease, because even if he walks some batters, he's going to get out of the trouble. And as long as he follows that kind of Blake Snell blueprint, not necessarily the pitch execution, but hey, I'm going to throw my best stuff and mm-hmm. it's either going to lead in walks, or I'm going to strike you out, or you'll ground into a double play. And if he follows that, I mean, I can see such a big change for Dylan Cease's numbers. I think the whip is still going to be high, of course, but the ERA can come down a lot. The strikeouts yeah. are always going to be there. And there's something to say about playing for a team that's trying to win, right? Like, he's been pitching for the White Sox. They have been irrelevant for quite some time now. So now that he's on a team that wants to win and has rivalries and has some fire underneath them, I think Cease is really going to be motivated to perform better.
Yeah, there's definitely that possibility. I mean, we talked about it last year with Seattle, right? That team kind of gaining some momentum from showing up at the playoffs, and so then the entire team kind of this past season was, you know, really charged and kind of a fun atmosphere, and you know, winning begets winning. You know, I think that's something that is somewhat contagious. I know the Diamondbacks kind of were in that similar spot with the playoffs, and so maybe this is a good jumpstart to Cease's his season, right? He's around some other elite pitchers. He's not just going to be relied on as the ace of the staff. And so, yep. Yeah, maybe that does help him alleviate some pressure, and he's able to go out there and have a bit more fun while pitching.
Yeah, I like that a lot. So Dylan Cease's stock a little bit up since he got traded to the Padres. Now, before we get into a break and then talk about TGFBI, mm-hmm. I am currently on the clock
in
a league that we're both in. And that is the pitcherless league, where it's basically a league where you can win and go into a better league and keep improving the league you're in every year. And basically, I don't like my team in this draft. I'll just be straight up honest. This is my least favorite team
yeah.
out of all of the drafts I've done so far. And I'll just run through the picks really quick. I had the 10th pick overall. And I went with Otani, then Trey Turner, then Luis Castillo, Pablo Lopez, Nolan Jones, Matt McClain, Josh Lowe, Camilo Duvall, Nick Castellanos, Michael King, Jake Berger, and Josh Naylor. Now, I'm very upset because I really wanted to take Yiner Diaz this round, and he was taken.
Tough.
And I was going to take Ryan Helsley, but he was taken, and Wyatt Langford, and he was taken. So I am kind of upset, but I already know my pick, so I'll make a pick live really quickly before we throw it to the break, and I am going to select my fourth starting pitcher, I have Luis Castillo, Pablo Lopez, Michael King, and one of my breakout pitchers for the year, Nick Pivetta. So Nick Pivetta, welcome to the squad, and I'll throw it to another person to draft, and maybe we'll get another pick at some point because I am on the turn kind of. So,
hey, that's more starters than me because I currently have Garrett Cole, who obviously isn't starting, Joe Ryan, Blake Snell, who currently isn't signed to a team.
Yep.
And Bailey Ober. So I'm going to be relying on two Twins pitchers for some stats. So
yeah, you need the Twins to do well. I need the Twins to do well as well, with Pablo Lopez being one of the heads of my staff. So fingers crossed for that. And hopefully Nick Pivetta breaks out, like I said. But before we start talking about the other pitcherless drafts as well as TGFBI, we will take a quick break and we'll be back after this. All right, we are back. And it's time to talk about TGFBI. Now, you probably have heard other podcast hosts or anybody on Twitter or X talk about TGFBI, and you might not know what it is. And what it is, it's an industry league called the Great Fantasy Baseball Invitational, and it's hosted by Justin Mason on the NFBC platform. And if you're not aware of this platform, it's like the World Series of fantasy baseball platforms. If you're in a home league, you might only know about ESPN or Yahoo. Maybe you're a little bit more advanced and your team is on FanTrax or something along the lines of that. But NFBC is where the main event is hosted. Some of the biggest money leagues that fantasy baseball has to offer is on this website, and it is the home of TGFBI. So first of all, I wanted to take a quick little moment to thank Justin Mason for allowing both John and I and countless other pitcher list podcast hosts and writers take place in TGFBI. It is so special. I mean, it really brought meaning to me playing fantasy baseball to just be recognized as someone who is in the industry and is amongst all these amazing, wonderful fantasy minds. And some people have won thousands and thousands of dollars. Some people are esteemed hosts of shows and incredible writers that have so many awards. I mean, hey, we've gotten an award too, but not going to talk about that too long. But it is incredible to be able to just be a part of this group of people. So Justin, if you somehow end up listening to this, thank you so much for letting John and I be a part of it, because we definitely love being a part of it. So to recap TGFBI and what it is an industry league where some of the best writers, analysts, fantasy minds all come together and compete. And the cool thing about TGFBI is it's an overall league of about 380 people, I believe. It's somewhere around that. I don't know the exact number this season, but it's about 380 people from the industry, and they all get broken down into random 15-team leagues, and you play against your other 14 people in that league, but you also play for the overall, who did the best out of every 15-team league. And John did pretty well last season. I've never cracked the top 100. The closest I came, I believe, is 150, which I'm still proud of. Out of nearly 400 people, 150 is more than half. So I will take that, and I hope to crack the top 100 this season. But John, tell us a little bit about your experience in TGFBI and how you finished last season.
Yeah, so last year was my first season doing any sort of NFC style draft. So this, yeah, it was 15 team. And NFC is kind of unique. There's no IL spots. So it's kind of annoying a little bit, but you basically draft 30 players. And for me last year, I got as high as I believe 12th in the overall. I ended up finishing the season 55th in the overall, which is pretty solid.
Incredible. Congratulations on that. That's very impressive, especially in your first season in a format you're not familiar with. So
yeah,
very good job, John. Very good job.
Yeah, it was pretty fun. And in my league overall, I finished third, which was kind of impressive because my league, I mean, the fun thing about TGFBI is, you know, I'm just a podcaster with Pitcherlist. I'm an editor with Pitcherlist, right? So in terms of my, let's just say, historical background with fantasy baseball, it's pretty casual. So,
right.
That all being said, though, you know, the people that were in my league last year, I'll just run through some of the names. You know, we had Chris Clegg in the league, who again, he runs the Dugout Dynasty, longtime Fantrax guy, Toolshed Pod. That's his thing. Tristan Cockcroft, who, you know, basically is Hall of Famer fantasy sports guy. Scott Pianowski, again, another Hall of Famer.
Yahoo.
Yep. You know, really big names there. And then just, you know, a lot of other, you know, industry people who, you know, work with Reliever Recon, some other, you know, pitcherless people as well. basically a lot of, you know, big fantasy names. And impressively, I was able to finish third in that league, which was pretty cool. Could I have done better? Sure. I was only off first place by 5 points. So it was a pretty close season overall in a roto league. You know, being off by 5 points is just like a change in a category in like two or three categories, right? Something like that. So really fun sort of experience. I have zero expectations for this year. I think it's just a fun thing to do in my opinion, and being a part of this whole competition, and we'll see what happens. But yeah, looking forward to the season. I don't have as many big names in my league this year. I actually don't recognize any of the names in my league this year. I don't have like two Hall of Famers, but regardless, it's going to be a good fight.
Yeah, that's the cool thing about TGFBI is you get put up against people from all different sections of the internet or different fantasy backgrounds, and they could be Hall of Famers, like you mentioned, or up-and-comers or newcomers. Like, there's so many different people you can meet, and honestly, my draft this season was the most enjoyable for me because, first of all, everyone was really, really nice. I tried to always form a Twitter or X DM group so that we can keep each other informed on when we're on the clock and keep things moving. And everyone was down and everyone was so friendly, and we had like actual great conversation. Like, I'm not going to throw any shade at anybody, but last year I tried doing this. I set it up. Everyone was cool and whatnot, but we were like having conversations, and there was someone who's in the industry that wrote in our DM group, were like, can we stop talking about stuff and blowing up my phone? Let's just keep it to tagging people on the clock. And I was like, come on, man. Like, this is a fun league. There's no money behind it. You're in a fun industry league. Like, if you are so bothered by it, don't participate. So this year we had a lot of people talking about our picks and sending memes, and it was great. And actually, it was one of the fastest TGFBI leagues that I've ever been a part of, where we actually finished, like, I believe one of the first five leagues to finish drafting. Yeah. So we were quick with it. I remember I was done with my draft at the end of last podcast, and you were still in round like 21 of 30.
Yeah, so, it was tough.
Yeah, we were moving along quite well. So I'm very proud of my league for drafting as well as they did and as quick as they did. And I'm pretty happy with my team. Now, before we start talking about our team and what we think of it and talking about each other's squads, I just wanted to say that TGFBI is a 15-team league, like I said. It's a roto league, so it's all season long accumulating. There's a fab budget, so you have a certain amount of money you could spend on free agent players on the wire, and it's basically based on who bids the highest gets the player. And then also it is where there is two catchers. I believe there's seven or eight pitcher spots. There is a corner infield, middle infield, and then the standard positions with five outfield. So the league is very industry standard. It's roto, regular categories, wins, saves, the whole nine yards. So that is the TGFBI league. And John, why don't you start us off with your team? How did your team end up? Where did you draft from? What slot? And what does your team look like?
Yeah, so I drafted from the third pick out of a 15-teamer. And I knew kind of immediately that regardless of what was going to happen, I was going to do everything in my power to make sure I picked Mookie Betts third. So obviously Acuna was going to go number one. And then, you know, depending on who you're talking to, you know, Julio Rodriguez, Bobby Witt, a little bit of Corbin Carroll talk, right? Who's going to be number two. Ultimately, Julio went number two. So I was like, oh, that's easy. I'll just go Mookie number three. And you know, the projections kind of have Bobby ahead of Mookie, but the eligibility, and of course, this was actually announced after I drafted Mookie, but the whole, he's going to play shortstop for this season, came up, and I was like, oh, that's, I learned that, like, you know, midway through my draft, so it didn't mostly help me in my team construction, but, you know, it's nice to know that he has that sort of positional eligibility. So, again, went with Mookie, and then I teased this last week on the pod, I went Vlad round two, and then I've been kind of doing this a little bit when I'm early in drafts. I went Semi in the third round.
Nice.
Even though I drafted Mookie, because it's like, hey, I can put Mookie at second, short, or outfield. I'm not log jammed. I might as well take Semi in, you know. So went there. Then next two picks were pitchers off the board. So I took Freddie Peralta, Logan Gilbert.
Nice.
a combination there, I think, for me is, you know, Freddy Peralta, obviously elite stuff, but has a tendency of getting hurt. Meanwhile, Logan Gilbert, really solid pitcher who's probably going to give you 190 innings. So it felt like a really good combination there to go for, you know, both of those guys still top 15 pitchers, you know, in my book. So really nice there. And then got my third baseman in Nolan Arenado, probably a little early, sixth round. I don't love getting Arenado, but the thing is, you know, the next third baseman off the board, I think, was Josh Jung two rounds later. So, you know, Arenado is kind of the last good third baseman in my opinion. So being able to get him, I think, is just good enough value. Picked up my first reliever in David Bednar in the round seven. And then rounds eight and nine were my catcher, Salvi. And then I picked up Sonny Gray. And this was before we got the news that he was going to be probably delayed in his start to the season.
Right.
But, you know, as my third pitcher, it's not too bad. I'm able to cover that in other ways. So, yeah, so that was my first nine rounds of this 30-round draft.
Wow. Yeah, so that looks really good. Now, I will say that Arenado was actually drafted by Team 3 in round 6 in my league as well. So
oh, really? Okay, so exactly early, the same.
Right, exactly the same, yeah. So pretty funny. And believe it or not, Team 3 also got Vlad Jr., but with the third round pick.
Oh,
so,
sure.
Yeah, so that's pretty interesting stuff. I love your first three picks. I'm not as high on Vlad as you are this season. I know you're a big Vlad guy this season.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's your, you know, fish in the bucket right there. But I like Vlad. I'm not a huge Vlad guy, but I like Vlad. So yeah. I really like your first five picks. I think you did a really good job of making a solid structure. I've constantly said this season I hate second base. So if I can grab one of the Ozzy Albies, Marcus Semien, Jose Altuve, then that clears my headache and I don't have to think about it. So same. I love that you picked Semien. Mookie, once again, second short in outfield. You can do whatever you want with him.
Yeah.
And that is incredible. So I really like your start. I think you did a good job of nailing those guys down.
I will say, because again, the news that Mookie was going to get shortstop eligibility came out pretty late in the TGFBI draft.
Right.
So I was freaking out, like kind of after round 10. I was like, I don't have a shortstop. And they all kind of suck.
Oh, big time.
Yeah, so honestly, getting Mookie and having shortstop eligibility for him is going to be huge for my team, because I'll talk a little later about who I picked up at shortstop. But yeah, having Mookie there and then being able to shuffle around a couple more guys in the outfield is going to be a very nice problem to have.
Yeah, it's going to be really nice with that eligibility. Obviously, your Bednar pick is kind of rough with him being hurt and out for a little bit.
Yeah.
And Aroldis Chapman's going to cover the time being. So hopefully, I don't know if he was drafted in your league, but maybe you can grab Chapman off the wire and maybe work with that. But Bednar will be back eventually and he'll probably be the closer, so that's good. And then obviously Sonny Gray has to work his way up, but your first 10 rounds, very good.
Thank you.
No problem. For me, I was the one spot this year. I got so lucky to be the one spot. I couldn't believe it when I saw it, because usually whenever I do it, I set it so I'm like, I want the first pick, and then I want like second, third, fourth. I think I really wanted a top four pick this season. Or I wanted the back end. I didn't want anywhere in the middle. So I kind of stacked it, and then I refreshed it on the day, and I was the first pick. So very ecstatic about that. So obviously with the first pick overall, I went with Nick Pivetta. So I obviously went Ronald Acuna. No duh. Pretty obvious he was there. So Acuna won, no doubt. Then it was really about who was going to make it back to me, because that's the one thing about drafting on the ends this season, 1 and 15 for this draft context, is you really don't know what's going to make it to you. And then you have to pick two people and realize that a bunch of people are going to leave the board before you get to pick again. So it's a hard spot to be in. And I know it's like, oh, wow, it's a hard spot to be in. You got Acuna. Like, yeah, I get it. I understand. But it really does change the flow of the draft for you, because you're selecting two players at a time, not one, and not really relying on people to fall rather than picking what's left. So you're kind of at the mercy of the rest of the room, right? So I went Acuna, and then I saw what was going down, and people were taking, like, Spencer Strider went third overall.
Jeez.
Okay. It went Acuna, Witt, Strider in my league.
Wow. Okay.
So, yeah, Mookie Betts actually went seventh.
That's insane.
Which is insane to me, right? I think Mookie Betts is either two or three in a standard league like this.
Yeah.
And that's where I would go. You know, like if I was on the board with your pick, team three, and it went Acuna Witt like it did in my draft, yeah. I would have went Mookie Betts there with the third. So I like your pick of Mookie, of course. But anyways, it went around and Ellie actually went right before my pick, which I thought he was going to be there, which is interesting. But that allowed Marcus Semien to fall to me. And Albies actually went to team nine. So like second baseman, we're already getting off the board. So I said, you know what, let me just grab Marcus Semien. And then I wanted to pair it with an ace. I wanted to get an ace early. So I went Acuna, Semien, Gausman to start. And then obviously halfway through the draft, it came out that Gausman had a little bit of an injury, but he seems to be okay. So thank God for that. Otherwise, you know, I basically had the news of Acuna's knee and then Gausman's injury. And I was like, okay, how do I quit a league on NFBC? Like, how do I back out of this? So that was my first three rounds. Then it came around to the fourth and fifth, and I had a big choice. So I'm just going to read off from team 12 to team four what was picked in round four. It went Framber Valdez, Logan Webb, Devin Williams, Josh Hader, Logan Gilbert, Freddie Peralta, Johan Duran, Emmanuel Clase, Tarik Skubal. So talk about a pitcher run.
Yeah,
I mean, literally eight picks in a row, all pitchers starting and closing. So I said, man, what am I going to do here? I really don't know who I'm going to pick. I don't like any of the bats available. I really realized that I don't like any of the bats in like the 4 to 6 range for the rounds. You know, it's just not great. So I said, you know what? Let me focus on just hammering down my pitching staff. And I went Bobby Miller with my fourth round pick because out of everybody that was left, I felt like he had the most upside in terms of getting me wins. Between Gausman and Bobby Miller, both on pretty good teams, I thought they were going to contribute wins. Gausman's got strikeouts. Bobby Miller's got a little bit maybe less strikeouts, but he's got great stuff that can get strikeouts. So kind of like your pairing of Peralta and Gilbert, you kind of have one heavy strikeout guy and one kind of floor guy, and that's kind of what I did as well. Gausman and Miller, I thought it evened out, and of course he's on the Dodgers, so wins should come easily. Then this might be my only mistake, quote-unquote, of the draft, and it was in the fifth round where I had the choice because I said, you know what? I'm going to grab a closer. I never really do this in TGFBI. I think I went with Helsley in the sixth last season, and then he got hurt and he stunk. And yeah, that was just bad for me. I never have luck with closers in TGFBI. But I went with Pete Fairbanks just based off of metrics and vibe. If the Rays do a Ray and don't let him close most of the time, then I hate myself. But I had the choice between Iglesias and Duvall, and I went Fairbanks. I just went with my gut and went with what I thought was the better reliever. But looking back on it, I probably wish I took Iglesias or Duvall just because Iglesias obviously on the Braves, they're going to win a billion games, and Duvall just has really, really good stuff, but so does Fairbanks. So I'm not mad about it, but oh well. And then I'll run through these picks pretty quick. 6 through 10, I went Christian Walker with my sixth pick because after him, I really don't like the first basemans that are available. Maybe Casas or Rhys Hoskins later, but I really wanted to hammer down first base, so I got Christian Walker. Then I took my first catcher in the seventh. I jumped on Yiner Diaz, who I am humongously high on this season.
Yes. Yeah.
I am through the moon over this guy. I can try to get him anywhere I'm drafting. He is my number one like catcher target. And I actually took him before Will Smith and Salvador Perez. So I went with Yiner. I just feel really good about it. That's my guy. So I rode with him. Then on the turn, this is the first time I ever doubled up on something like we talked about in the last podcast where when you're on the turn, you can kind of like start a starting pitcher run or start a relief pitcher run. And I really never wanted to do that because I just don't like doubling up on something and being weak somewhere else. But I said 8-9, let me do this because I didn't like many of the names after these two players. And I really like these two players. I said, let me double down on outfielders. And I went Nick Castellanos and George Springer in the 8th and 9th. And then with my 10th pick, I went with the aforementioned Nick Pivetta, who's been a star on this episode. I drafted him in the other league that we were doing live, and I joked about him at first overall, but I took him 10th. So my pitching staff is Gausman, Miller, Pivetta, and Fairbanks, and my offense is Acuna, Semien, Walker, Diaz, Castellanos, and Springer through 10 rounds.
Okay, yeah. I really like that pitching staff. It's like kind of top heavy, which is really nice. Works out really well for you. And I think even, you know, taking a closer in the sixth round, like that's kind of, that makes sense for the value, especially in TGFBI, where again it's a 15 team league. So if everyone's gonna get like two closers, it's better to have at least one really solid closer. Yeah. Instead of like floundering around. Like last year, I think I was in the same boat where I had Helsley, but he was my only closer that I had.
Yeah.
So I really got wrecked in saves last year in Roto, which was unfortunate. But you know, I think that that's what makes this initial fab run so huge, because it's like you're going to have a lot of money put down for pie amps, for McGill, you know, maybe Michael Kopech if he was not picked up in a draft. Yep. he's announced as not going to be starting for the White Sox. So it's kind of the opportunity to, you know, shore up that position in a good way. So yeah, I mean, and that being said, I drafted Bednar in the seventh, so clearly like we were, you know, of a similar mind in terms of getting, you know, at least like a top 10 closer
at the
spot. Yeah,
I mean, what's crazy about it too is I kind of started a run on closers in that fifth round. So like I told you, there was an 8-pick stretch in the fourth round of just pitchers and closers. Mm-hmm. Well, I went Pete Fairbanks. The next 3 picks were Raisel Iglesias, David Bednar, Camilo Duvall,
yep,
all in the fifth round. So that's pretty nuts. I mean, this is such a weird format where you do want to get one of those lockdown guys, but I did make a mistake. I'll mention it a little bit later that I should just really pair a closer when I go with one in the first 5 picks with another one in the first 10 picks. So like, sure, have both of my closers within the first 10 picks just to feel comfortable. You know, mm-hmm, you're never really comfortable with relievers and saves, but I'd feel a lot better with Pete Fairbanks and let's say Clay Holmes rather than the reliever I drafted, Will Smith.
Okay. Yeah. Tough.
Which I'll talk about later. So I feel a little bit better if my other option for saves was like an established guy, but I digress. We'll get into that, but let me know your 11 to 20 now.
Yeah. So I'll start off with my 10th pick, cause I didn't mention that, but I picked Zach Geloff here. Just kind of, that was my first like value pick, because again, this team at the time, I didn't know that Mookie had shortstop eligibility, but you know, I had Mookie, I had Semien. So I already had kind of two people that I could slot in my middle infield spot. And so Zach Geloff to me, like presented some value, even though the only outfielder I had drafted at that point was Mookie Betts. And I also hadn't technically drafted a shortstop yet.
Right.
So I was like, you know what, Zach Geloff though, I think he's that Oakland team. Someone has to do something, I guess. So picking up Zach Geloff there was more of like I see value here right now, so I'll take it.
Right.
Then I pick up my, I guess, second outfielder, TJ Friedl. I think there's some weird stuff about Friedl where people aren't really believing in his thing, because he was the kind of the quiet guy in Cincinnati, right?
Yeah.
Like you have all these stars there. You have Ellie, you got McLean, you got Spencer Steer, you got Encarnacion Strand. Friedl's like really solid. So I think getting him second as my second outfielder there, pretty solid. Then I went with Starling Marte. This is where the draft starts getting rough, right?
Okay.
So it's Starling Marte in the 12th round. And then I pick up my guy who I thought was going to be a starting shortstop in Jeremy Pena.
Oh,
and that was rough, because I was actually targeting Willy Adames there, but he got taken in the 12th round before my Starling Marte pick.
Ah.
So that was a little tough. A little other backstory, TJ Friedl, he was sandwiched by Anthony Volpe and Trevor Story. So shortstops were just flying in at the time that I wanted to pick up shortstops. So again, having Mookie have shortstop eligibility is a godsend in this,
yeah, that's
in this
huge
league
for you.
And then just running through the kind of the rest, Luis Campusano as my second catcher. I think there's a lot of value there. Obviously, he's super young. Who knows what's going to happen? But hey, the Padres might be decent, and Campusano's might be able to benefit from that. Took my second closer in Kyle Finnegan. I don't know why. I always have like a lot of trust in Kyle Finnegan, because even on bad teams, someone has to get saves.
Yep.
That being said, though, I think there's been some rumors that Hunter Harvey might end up taking the job for him. But for the time being, Kyle Finnegan is the closer there. So I took him. Jose Abreu is kind of like a corner outfielder, corner infielder. There's probably some value in that bat still. And then I took a starter after a big lull, Tristan McKenzie, which I don't love, but you know, I think if he's healthy, he's a top 30 guy, easy.
Right.
So being able to get that value in the 17th round, not bad. And then Brian De La Cruz in the 18th, kind of just a speed sometimes homers combo there. Michael Wacha, who, even though as much as I like the joke about Kansas City getting a bunch of just really lame pitchers, he's actually probably going to be decent in Kansas City. So picked him up there. Jeff McNeil at pick 20, who just kind of, you know, solid average dude, can play in a lot of different spots, second base and outfield. So he's eligible for basically three different spots on my team, which is pretty nice in terms of flexibility there. So, yeah, that's kind of how I rounded out 9 through 20.
Yeah, I mean, there's some questionable names in there, like you mentioned, and some questionable picks. You don't feel great about them, right? Like, that's the thing. Mm-hmm. When you get to these rounds, you either really love it or you really hate it. And for me, it's the opposite. I actually love my 11 to 20. I think it's a really strong 11 to 20. Mm-hmm. But I really do like Zach Gelof. I think he's going to be very good. And I like TJ Friedl a lot. A lot of people are kind of bashing on him or don't think he'll repeat, but
yeah,
I think he's going to surprise some people where he'll still be sneakily good. So I like that Friedl pick. Don't really hurt yourself on taking Friedl as your second outfielder technically.
Yeah, I mean, I legitimately think it's like an aspect of like people are expecting a lot out of him because, again, he's the names that he's with are Ellie De La Cruz, Christian Encarnacion Strand, Spencer Steer. Like, yeah, he's not going to be like them, but he's gonna benefit from being in that offense a lot. And he plays half his games in Great American Small Park. So I'm pretty okay with that, especially in a roto league,
Yeah. Oh, I agree. And I really like TJ Friedl for that reason. Hopefully he has full playing time and doesn't platoon or anything. Mm-hmm. But if he has full playing time, I really like him as your outfield too. So don't sell yourself short on TJ Friedl. I love it. But my 11 through 20. So you mentioned how third base kind of, you know, isn't that great after you take Arenado. Well, yeah. I actually really like third base deep this season. Mm. And with my 11th round pick, I took Jake Berger. And I think he's going to put up very similar numbers to Arenado if he keeps up what he did at the end of last season and how he transformed himself a little bit. But in this round, Berger went, Hayes went, Young went, and Marte went. Well, obviously Marte was a bust, but I like Ke'Bryan Hayes. I like Josh Young. I like Jake Berger. So that tier I've been prying at in drafts for third base. So I really like my Jake Berger pick there. And then in the 12th, my offense right now is outfield, 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 first base, catcher, second base, third base. What position didn't I name? Shortstop. Mm-hmm. And as you mentioned, shortstop is like a wasteland. It really is. Like, if you don't take one of those top shortstops, it is a wasteland. So I thought about it, and Willy Adames went this round. Trevor Story went the round before. Volpe went the round before that. So I was like, you know what? Let's take a gamble. And I went with Jackson Holliday in the 12th round. And I feel better and better about that pick every single day. I hope he breaks camp with the team and is the starting shortstop, because if he is, this pick was immaculate. Yeah. But if he doesn't, then maybe I have to wait a little bit. But I think he's the answer to that late shortstop pick where all of the lower tier options that you feel okay with go, and you have to take a gamble on someone. And it's going to be harder with drafts coming up this weekend and stuff, because he might get word of he made the team and then his stock goes up crazy. Yeah. But with when this draft took place, Jackson Holliday in the 12th seemed like a great price for me. So I went with Holliday. Then I was between going Mitch Garver for my catcher too, which I really love this year as well, or a pitcher that I'm very high on, and I know Nick loves as well, Shota Imanaga. And I went with Shota. So my staff is now Gausman, Miller, Pivetta, and Imanaga. So I love the staff. Then I took Dalton Varsho, who I think is going to have a big bounce back year, as my outfield four. I like the speed and power combo. Obviously, the average isn't great. Hopefully, he can lift that up. He had a down year and was battling a little bit of injury. So hopefully, he comes back strong and playing better. I just think the Blue Jays in general have to play better. I have Springer and Varsho on this team. You have big hopes for Vlad. I just think that team underperformed as a whole, and I think they're going to take a step forward this season. And then with my 15th round pick, I took Brian Bello of the Red Sox. I really like him to be my SP5. I think he's got good upside. Then 16 to 20, I'll run through quickly. Byron Buxton in the 16th, who will eventually be outfielder. And come on, at that price, I love Byron Buxton. I mean, even if he gives me, let's say, 70 games and he gives me 15 homers and 10 stolen bases, in the 16th round, I'll take that from my outfield five. So if he's healthy, he's obviously going to outperform that 16th round, but are we banking on him to be healthy? No, not really. But I'll take the gamble all day in the 16th round. Then I went my second closer, Will Smith. Then I went my second catcher, Elias Diaz. I paired both Diazes together without noticing, Yiner and Elias. So I guess I'm the Diaz catcher, boys. Then I went with two picks that I know you're going to like. Eugenio Suarez, round 19.
Yes.
So Berger and Suarez are my two third base options. I love that, putting him in corner infield.
Yeah.
It's great. And then I took Shane Baz as a gamble in round 20.
Okay.
And
yeah.
I really wanted Luis Severino in round 20, and he went the pick before me.
Mm-hmm.
And then I took Shane Baz because why not? So that was my 11 to 20. I think it went really well. I love these picks.
Yeah. I mean, we were talking about Byron Buxton when you picked him up because I think I was obviously a couple rounds behind you.
Yep.
I was in round 16. I was like, hey, this is going to be the place where I take Byron Buxton. And then he got taken three picks before my pick.
No,
and I was so annoyed.
That's so annoying.
So I settled for Jose Abreu, which is kind of tough. But
yeah, okay.
I do love your catcher mix because Elias Diaz, man, like, I know part of it is Coors. And I know we kind of joked about this last year on the pod where he was the number one catcher for like a couple months.
All-star game MVP, baby.
All-star game MVP, yeah. Like, there's some legitimacy in that bat. He's like not terrible as your second catcher. There's a lot worse that you could do there. I feel good about Dalton Varsho. I mean, yes, his value took a hit because he no longer has catcher eligibility, but I think a lot of people are overlooking the fact that he still is going to play every single day in the outfield for the Toronto Blue Jays. So being able to be part of that offense, again, you know, first year in Toronto, so there's probably, you know, more of a settling down period now. He still is a power speed combo, you know, like 15-15, it feels like kind of his floor.
Yep.
15-20 maybe. And I think he can definitely do better than that. So yeah, really, really like those picks. The Eugenio Suarez one is fine. I don't think I have any shares of Eugenio Suarez so far.
What?
In all of my drafts. It just hasn't happened, which is kind of unfortunate. But
that's funny.
Yeah, he's always been drafted a little bit, you know, on the opposite side of where I am. I think something that is funny, though, is, you know, you and I both talk about how shortstop, like, you know, you went with Jackson Holliday. I went with Jeremy Pena, you know, guys that aren't really, you know, the top seven sort of shortstop names.
Yeah, right.
And then the funny thing is last year, both you and I were kind of at the end of the draft, right? I think I was pick 14.
Yes.
And I forget, you were kind of pick 13, pick 14 somewhere.
Yeah, I was
there,
right around that range. Yep.
And I think both of us really loved Corey Seager.
Yep.
And it feels like really for a lot of these 15 teamers and some 12 teamers, the shortstops end up getting picked on that side of the turn.
Yeah. Yep.
And the corner guys end up kind of taking on our side of the turn, which is it's just kind of the way things are ranked, where it's like, yeah, if you're on our side of the turn, and round two and three is coming to you, like your kind of best bet for picking guys up is like maybe Bichette, maybe Gunnar Henderson's around.
Yep.
CJ Abrams, if you really believe in that, right? A little bit later, O'Neill Cruz, if you really want to bet on that. But the really top guys, right? Like Bobby, Treya, Corey, Seager, Francisco Lindor, like they're gone by the time like the turn comes back to us, which it's a little unfortunate, but it does mean that you kind of have to prep and say like, where am I willing to find value for shortstop on my side of the turn? You know, do I want to go early and get someone like Anthony Volpe, or do I want to wait, get some value in Jackson Holliday? You know, I think that's a really interesting question, and obviously we'll get more information about it as spring training goes on, because yeah, there's some real hype about Jackson Holliday being the opening day shortstop for the Orioles.
Yeah, I'm certainly hoping so, because I took a lot of gambles on him in drafts this season, so I'm hoping that pans out. And you were right. I mean, that's a really good observation. I mean, team 12 took Trey Turner in my league. Team 15 took Francisco Lindor in round 2. Bichette and Abrams both went to team 12 and 13 on the other side. O'Neill Cruz went on this side. So a lot of shortstops went on that turn on the back half of the draft rather than the first. So yeah, that's a good observation there. But wrap us up with your 21 to 30 picks for TGFBI.
Yeah. So these are all pure dart throws, right? Like you'll be starting a couple of these guys because I think you start like, what, 23 players out of your 30. So
about that. Yeah. So I'll count it while you do it.
Right. So picks 21 to 30. It's they're not great names, but they're fun names. So we've got Dean Kramer, JP Sears, Andrew Benintendi, Joey Meneses. I believe Joey Meneses, Cal Gibson. Hey, he's technically the opening day starter for the St. Louis Cardinals, I think. Max Scherzer, he might be good. Who knows? And then Tommy Pham, technically not on a team yet. We'll see how that goes. AJ Minter as kind of a, hey, maybe Raisel Iglesias doesn't close every game. Joey Gallo for, you know, why not? He might hit a ton of homers. You don't lose points for strikeouts in this league. And then to wrap it up, Leover Peguero, who is kind of like a fun little dark horse for me. He is going to be the starting second baseman for the Pirates. Granted, he's going to be a nine hole hitter, but he's had a really good spring training so far this year. So maybe there's a little bit of hype there. He's got some good steals projection in his makeup.
Yeah, I mean, 21 to 30 here, folks, is basically just all dart throws, like John said. It's really just, especially because we are with some of the industry's best and smartest minds, and we're drafting with people who do this for a living almost. So it's hard to really dig for value. You just got to take chances on guys, and it's tough. And to recap what you were saying, it's 23 active players and 7 bench spots with no IL. Mm-hmm. So that's what the active is. I believe it is 9 pitcher spots, then 1 util, 1 middle infield, 1 corner infield, 5 outfield, and 2 catchers. So that's the layout for TGFBI. My 21 to 30, my favorite pick of your 21 to 30 is Tommy Pham. I liked him so much that I took him in the 21st round.
Wow. Okay.
And he still doesn't have a team, which is unfortunate, but I think he's a great pick because whatever team he's on, he's going to get regular playing time, I hope. Mm-hmm. And he was really good last season. I mean, his StatCast numbers were through the roof. He hit the ball really hard. He's still fast. I really like Tommy Pham. I'm surprised no team has scooped him up for the low because he's really good. I don't know why people are sleeping on Tommy Pham, but I'll gladly take him as my outfield 6. So yeah, give me him. I took Tim Anderson in round 22 to back up Jackson Holliday, just in case he doesn't break camp as the opening day starter for shortstop. I took Tim Anderson, who's going to be the opening day starter for the Marlins. And I think he's going to have a better year as well. He didn't hit his first home run last year until like 2 months into the season. So I think Tim Anderson is going to have a better year overall. And if Jackson Holliday isn't my starting shortstop, Tim Anderson will be. I don't love it, but I'm really banking on Jackson Holliday. Then I went Eric Fetty, obviously hoping he is the Japan version of himself. Then I went Dane Dunning for some volume. I picked Jason Adam in round 25 to back up my Pete Fairbanks, just in case. I took Chris Taylor in round 26 for some positional eligibilities. Nolan Shanuel, who I like a lot deep for first base. He's going to probably be the two-hole hitter for the Angels. So anybody in front of Mike Trout, I like that value. Round 27. 28, I took Sawyer Gibson-Long of the Tigers. 29, I took Michael Massey of the Royals, who I really like deep for second base. He's the guy I like really fall back on. Brandon Lau, Jonathan India, and Michael Massey are like the three guys late if I don't get a second baseman early that I fall back on, and Massey is my guy in the 29th. And then, like I mentioned before, my 30th round pick, I was going to go with Joel Piamps, and I ended up going with Jesus Sanchez of the Marlins for another outfielder just in case that Buxton gets hurt or someone gets hurt. I said I have Tommy Pham in case he doesn't have a team. I got Jesus Sanchez. So that's my 21 to 30.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, bunch of dart throws, but guys that are going to get at bats, right? That's kind of the key thing here, you know. Like, yes, this is, I mean, what, pick three, past pick 300, right?
Yes,
but some of these guys are going to be playing every single day, right? Nolan Shanuel, there's no one competing with him for first base and with the Angels. He's going to hit every single day. Tim Anderson is the starting shortstop for the Marlins, you know, like even the pitcher. Yeah, Michael Massey, for sure. Even these pitchers, right? Like Eric Fetty is technically now the ace of the Chicago White Sox.
That's crazy.
He's going to pitch every turn in the rotation, right? So sometimes when you play roto, half the battle is just getting guys who have stats. And, you know, even if they're not like elite stats, if they're good enough stats, right, that's helpful.
Yeah, in TGFBI specifically, for those listening, it is somewhere that you need depth because you get rocked with injuries and there's no IL spots. Like last season, I had O'Neal Cruz, Corey Seager. I had to just hold these guys. I can't drop them because what if they come back and are monsters? I mean, just so many injuries throughout the season, and then you don't have space. So you really try to create as much depth as you can, and you just need people that will get at bats and will be pitching. Like, you need these players to just eat innings and literally play every day. And that's what Tommy Pham, Tim Anderson, Eric Fetty, Dane Dunning, Chris Taylor, Nolan Shanuel, like, they're all going to be everyday players and pitchers. So you kind of need those guys for the guys that get hurt, or, you know, you just need them to have backups. So it is a tough league, and TGFBI is a lot of fun. We'll see who does well this season. I'm really hoping for a top 100 finish. I mean, the fact that you came in third in your league and were 55th overall is insane, because that means two top 50 finishers were in your league as well.
Yeah.
So pretty nuts on that end. I don't think anyone really was huge in my league. I think we had two people that were in the top 100. I think maybe one was top 30. And I believe I was middle of the pack. I think I came in like sixth or seventh, and I was like overall like 150 something, I think.
Yeah. So in my league, I mean, shout out to Anthony Tucker, who's also a pitcherless staffer. I think he was like third in TGFBI. Wow. For like a good chunk of the season. Unfortunately, his team fell off a little bit, and he ended up finishing second in my league, but he was up there. You know, Schwebsi was also up there, another pitcherless guy. The fun thing about this is that you get to follow it the entire season and see how things are going. And like I said, I mean, I got up to 12th. I ended up finishing 55th. So that's just the reality of roto. Sometimes things don't swing your way, but, still really fun and enjoyable to be a part of.
Yeah, I completely agree. I'm hoping to have a good season. I would love to win the overall 1 year, because then you're just cemented as a legend, right? Like, you can put that in your... sure. bio forever, and you're a fantasy guy, man. Like, that solidifies you as a fantasy player. If you come in first in the biggest industry league put together, it's pretty cool. I mean, it's not like a main event where you're winning loads of money, but it's still prestigious to be against some of the best fantasy minds, and you being number one. So hopefully one of us can do it this year, John. I'm rooting for us.
Hey, we'll see what happens, right?
Yeah, absolutely. But that wraps up our TGFBI teams. Hopefully you all enjoyed that. We didn't get to talk much more about our pitcherless leagues, but John and I are on a worst ball league. That basically is, you want to select the worst players in baseball, where errors are counted and double plays are counted and all of these funny stats are counted. So the best player available is like Javier Baez. So it's really funny how that works. We're also in an AL-only league. I'm in. John and I are in a league together, which is like a standard league. I'm in another standard league as well. So we're in a bunch of different pitcherless fun leagues. I'm in a bunch of money leagues as well. John and I both have our home leagues coming up for drafts. So a lot of stuff going on. Draft season is fully among us, and hopefully you guys have a good draft season as well. But that wraps up this episode of This Week in Fantasy Baseball. Before you go, make sure you follow us on Twitter or X at ThisWeekPL, and send us your comments and questions to our email at thisweekplpod@gmail.com. You can find John on Twitter or X at TheJohnKa. That's THEJOHNKE. And you can follow myself on Twitter or X at Regicidal. That's REGICIDAL. If you haven't done so already, please subscribe to the Pitcherless Podcast feed on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever else you listen to your podcast on. And do us a favor really quickly. Please leave us a 5-star review if you enjoy listening to the show. Lastly, sign up for Pitcherless Plus. By doing so, you can join us in the Pitcherless Discord and get advice from all of the fantasy experts and writers over there. But that's all for this week. We are finally back on the regular weekly schedule. So for all of you who have missed that and are used to the bi-weekly episodes, we are back to each week. So hopefully you enjoy that. And we'll be back next week with another episode of This Week in Fantasy Baseball. For John, I'm Lee, and we'll see you in the next one. Later, everyone.